And welcome back to the Film Reel Cast. Talk to me, everyone. Talk to me. That is the name of the film this week, 2022. And to talk to me tonight, I have got the very sexy, the very toit, like a toiger, Stevie. How you doing, my friend?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, mate. How are you?
Not bad. Nice to have you back on the pod from this kind of very short hiatus
Thank you. You've
been away.
Yeah. I needed it. I needed a break from so many other participants.
And who would that be, I wonder, on the pod? Who's our other guest?
I guess you mean me. Hello.
Hello, Kelly. How are
yes,
you?
Yes, spot on.
You could say it with a little bit of enthusiasm. You have had a break, so that's...
This week, we are doing it's a horror film, kind of supernatural film. What would you call it, guys?
I'm going with horror.
I am going to go with psychological horror thriller.
We've mentioned this on the podcast before. I can't remember what film we were doing where I saw this at the cinema and you saw it as well, Steve, and you said it gave you nightmares and it terrified you, didn't it?
It didn't give me nightmares. It stopped me from sleeping. So in order to have nightmares, you have to be asleep. But this 3 days, I can say this confidently because I tell everyone the same story. For 3 days straight, I couldn't sleep right because of this film.
If there's any kind of vote of confidence to watch a film, if you want to be psychologically or mentally disturbed, then that is one. But yeah, it's Talk To Me, which is currently showing on Netflix in the UK, which was really kind of, it feels like it was only on the cinema a couple of months ago that we went to see it and that we were talking about it briefly. And it kind of came out of nowhere with a really small budget of $4.5 million, and it made gross over 90 million worldwide. So it was an absolutely huge hit, which kind of snuck up upon everyone, really, because I'd never heard of this. When I saw it at the cinema, I didn't know what it was about at all. And it just, first viewing, blew me away, and I did not fall asleep, which is a huge endorsement.
It's big for you. That is big.
It is. If I stay awake during the film, it's amazing. It really, really is. I saw Thanksgiving at the cinema the other week. Never fell asleep at all, which, again, is another recommendation to go and see Thanksgiving. Mm. Another really good kind of Scream-style, easy watching, very, very gory slasher film. So Thanksgiving's great. And they've left it open for a second one, which I'm hoping will come next year. The films lately, like the big blockbuster ones, have been bordering on 3 hours, which at the moment I don't have that time or concentration to invest.
No, it's a big ask, isn't it?
Yeah, Oppenheimer and that Leo, Killer of the Moonflower, that's what it's called, isn't it?
Yeah, something jazzy like that.
Yeah, that's just far too long. But this film, a relatively small cast, and I really, really enjoyed this. And it came up on Netflix surprisingly quick, to be honest. Usually things pop up on Disney Plus pretty fast because they're shit and that they've done poorly at the cinema. But this film is really good. As I say, it's budgeted by the Australian Film Board, and it just fucking smashed everywhere. And there's a number two has been licensed, Steve, isn't it?
Yeah, so a little while ago, it's A24 gave it the green light. I think based on how well it done, not only box office, but ratings. I'm a bit hesitant because a film like this, you know, could easily just be a standalone. So we'll have to see how that goes.
Yeah, and so there's quite a big cast, but the main characters, it's kept quite a small bunch. You've got Mia, played by Sophie Wilde, the very freaky, weird-looking Riley, which we're going to talk about, played by Joe Bird. You've got Jade, played by Alexander Jensen. Sue, who was in Lord of the Rings. I couldn't remember where I pictured her, but she was in Lord of the Rings, played by Miranda Otto. And you've got Haley, played by Zoe Trekkis. Chris Elizio, who plays a character called Josh, and Otis Darji plays Daniel. And they're the main characters in it. Everyone else don't really give a shit about, to be honest. But the start of this film, I haven't gone into the cinema not knowing anything what it's about. Just the picture with that hand and that really freaky face. I knew it was kind of going to be supernatural, but there's a party going on, isn't there? And you've got like an older brother going into the party. It's Duckett. It's Josh looking for his brother Duckett at this party.
Duckett, open the door or break it down. What?
Duckett, you can take you home, okay, bro?
Upset, you can hurt a lot of people. And you don't really know what's going on, do you? Because nothing's explained, because you're thrown into it. And you've got all these kids at the house party, and you can see he's got the panic in his eyes. When he brings him out, and the brother's all fucked up. It's like he's on drugs, isn't it, when he drags him out of this bedroom at this house party. And I did not know the way it was going to go. Did you guys?
No, this is probably by far one of the most shocking openings to any film I've ever watched, especially not knowing what was about to go down or what this film was about. This got me. This really fucking got me.
Yeah, this was quite it's one of the best openings of a film that I remember in kind of recent years. I mean, basically what happens, he goes into this house, there's a house party, he smashes down this door, and you don't know the urgency, and he brings his brother out, who, Duckett, who looks pretty calm. And when he brings him out, everyone's like videoing them, everyone's got their phones out, and they're recording him, and he freaks out. And whilst he freaks out, telling everyone to fuck off, just so he can leave the house, he turns around to his brother, who then stabs him in the stomach. And then you think he's dead. And then Duckett just walks out into the garden where everyone is freaking out, going absolutely mad. And you see his brother's got loads of cuts on his back. And it's an amazing side view where he looks down at the knife, almost as if like, what is this? And he sticks it in his eye. And I just thought, wow, this film is going to be fucking insane. I mean, what did you think, Kels? It's a brilliant opening.
Yeah, it is. It sets it up to be a pretty graphic and gory film. And I think I annoyingly have to agree with Steve. It is a really good opening and probably one of the best that I've seen to a film. But I imagine that might be what kept you awake and stopped you from sleeping, because it was quite freaky.
It was. It really, really got me. And as I say, the story, which I didn't know about, is when a group of friends discover how to conjure spirits using an embalmed hand, they become hooked on this new thrill until one of them goes too far and unleashes the terrifying supernatural forces that start taking them out kind of one by one and picking on the weakest, which is freakoid-looking Riley, played by Joe Burr. For me, the film, for the next, I'd say the next 20 minutes possibly, it was almost if it just stopped. It really slowed down. You've got the scene where Mia, who picks up Riley from one of his mates at this park, and they're driving back and they see this kangaroo in the road dying. It's so much padding out. The film slowed down. I know you can't keep it at the speed it went to start off with, but it just really took me out of the film. I don't know what you guys thought.
Yeah, because your heart's really beating after the first scene, and all of a sudden, it's such a contrast. You're almost like, oh, are we not going to address that? Are we just going to ignore what's happened? So I wasn't really fazed by what was happening, because I was still caught up in what I just witnessed of someone stabbing himself in the face.
Yeah, it never hung on that fact, did it? Because once the kid stabs himself in the face, obviously kills himself, a huge kitchen knife in his eye, it just then fades to Talk to Me. And then it's got Mia just driving the car, and there's no real mention of Duckett's brother. Or Duckett and his brother, of what happened. And it's just a lot of chat. And it kind of surprised me and intrigued me as to where it was going to go. But I think more so, it disappointed me, as in I couldn't pick up the foreshadow of what they were trying to tell me. I don't know what you thought, Kels.
I found it very, very slow. Once you've had an intro like that, I found it very slow for a good 15, 20 minutes. So I guess what they're trying to show you is suffering or something like that. I don't really know. But why they had to have an animal to suffer just annoys me, because that's just unnecessary.
But we do see Mia at a funeral, her mum's funeral, and we learn that Mia's mum, Rhea, she committed suicide by overdosing on sleeping pills off screen. We don't actually get to see that, but we get to see the fallout with the dad, Max, who can't deal with stuff. And they've kind of got a fractured relationship, which kind of comes into play. But when I first watched this, for some reason, I don't know if it's my lack of concentration, Kels, you'll probably pick up on that, but I thought like Mia was adopted by Sue and live with Jade and Riley, because she just seems so at home there and sleeps there when she wants, it appears to.
I didn't get that she was a dog. I kind of figured that she lived with her dad because she was washing up in the kitchen when he was trying to talk to her, wasn't he? And it was like that typical teenage connection where he's trying to talk and she's trying to do something else and doesn't really want to listen to him.
And it's strange when Mia goes and picks up Riley, a freak-looking child, and they go back to Jade's house, and we're introduced to Jade. And we learn that Jade is going out with Daniel, who used to go out with Mia. And there's a bit of rivalry there, but it's a really weird conversation when she's talking about Daniel touching her Gucci, which is a very strange, like, reference.
I need Daniel to come give my Gucci some attention.
Daniel, stop touching your Gucci.
I was my boyfriend before he was.
Oh my
yours.
God, you guys held hands once 3 years ago. That doesn't mean anything.
I missed that, clearly.
You did not lose that. Don't give me that. What, clearly you lost the reference? That.
I don't, yeah.
You're joking. I don't believe that for a second.
When's that? When is that?
You're playing far too innocent. If you re-listen to the 50 Shades podcast we did, and you're saying you'd missed a reference several times when she's saying, oh, I'll let him stroke my Gucci.
Yeah, no, I did miss that.
I think we're going to have to go to kangaroo court on this one.
I've lost that one straight away. You don't even need to go to kangaroo court.
Excellent stuff. I'm glad you know the rules.
Not even required. That is just a waste of time and energy.
I'm not referring to that kangaroo that we just run over in the road as roadkill.
Oh, that's just me.
I know. But again, this film, okay, set, I'd say it's 2022. It looks pretty up to date. I've never had an iPhone, but they're using pretty up to date iPhones. The fact that Jade has that frog, that ringtone, it was really strange for me. It so dated the film because no one has that. It just reminded me of The Inbetweeners.
That's a callback and a half, that, saying it reminds you of The Inbetweeners.
But it was just a weird ringtone, isn't it? It's come out of nowhere. I mean, that was 2005, that ringtone, or that song became a ringtone phenomenon around the world. And I've got it in a 2022. Is this meant to be set in 2005? Because, I mean, did you have FaceTime and shit like that then?
Fuck knows. I was 13.
Wow, I've aged myself embarrassingly there.
That's brilliant.
Kelly, you're old. Don't make out that you're some young spring chicken.
I don't think they did, because I'm not convinced that iPhones had been out that long at that
point.
There
you go. So, yeah, I just didn't know when it was set. But they're looking at the internet. They're looking at videos posted. I think, imagine it's on YouTube, of people freaked out, kind of possessed by this hand at various parties.
Have you seen the group chat? You mean the one I invited you to? It's Haley's video. You're doing it again tonight?
No.
What, to see if it's real.
No, not tonight, Neil. I can't.
And it's a weird thing that this is where they are, clearly in their circle of friends, in their school, that the norm is that people get possessed by this hand and film it and post it on social media to each other. It's a really weird thing. They don't get pissed. They don't go out shagging. They get possessed. It's a weird pastime to me.
But that's how generations evolve. I mean, when I was a kid, we'd go down to the park to get drunk. Kids nowadays ride around on electric scooters and inhale balloons. Like, you know, times change.
It does, and your generation tells. What are you allowed to tell us that you did without kind of tarnishing your name?
I mean, you won't believe me, but I didn't go out and get pissed or smoke or do anything, but that was the cool thing to do. I was just a sad, uncool child.
Mel, you're a sad, uncool adult.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm all right with that. I am. I'd rather be sad and different than just go along like a sheep.
Oh, well, I'd rather not be sad at all. So you'd be a loser.
That's fine. I'm good for that. I can make my own mind up. I don't have to follow a crowd.
Oh, one of these fucking hell. I'm going to keep your peace. Kel, do you know what? You do you. If that makes you happy, you do you.
Yeah.
And can I just say, for our listeners, and again, we've had another amazing month so far. It's only just over halfway through the month, and we've had over 20 odd thousand listens, streams, whatever you want to call it, to our podcast. So amazing stuff. Thank you. And you've noticed that a few times we've had a timer, a clock that's going on. And yeah. And that's from a program called Countdown. I don't know whether that's kind of worldwide phenomenon, this show where you have numbers and games and you have to make something up and you've got a countdown clock. So for those who have missed that reference, when we ask Kelly a question, and often she takes a long time to answer, when she does answer, it's one word. That's why that clock's in there, just for reference for people who have listened and wondered why.
Thanks, that's helpful.
So basically what that means is Kelly is slow.
Again, that extra explanation was needed. Thank you very much.
And the good thing, because I edit this, what Kelly doesn't know yet until she listens to this is I've just put the countdown clock in for her reply.
You're so kind. Up longer. So kind. Jesus. Well, wow.
It's not a religious podcast. Please just keep it normal. And in usual style, which they do in, we're going back to the film, guys, by the way, and they do in many a film where two adults kind of, or two teenagers want to go out, then the younger kid. We had this in Slender Man, a shit film on our queue. You can listen to that, but a very good podcast with Do Say So Myself. That Riley wants to go. They go into a party and they're going to use this hand. And it isn't a hand that gives pleasure, Kelly. It's a hand where you can contact the dead. And Riley's desperate to go and he blackmails both Mia and Jade.
What are you doing?
Mia said I could come.
How could I say no to him? You're not coming.
All right, then I'll tell Mum.
Yeah, well, she pretty much already knows.
What about you not picking me up?
Whatever.
Wanker thing to do. You're never going to get off on a good start when you do that. Were you two aggrass like that at all, at school or with your mates?
I was with my brother. Hell yeah.
What a surprise.
Yep, I was. I was horrible to my brother. We get on my now. When I was little, I was horrible.
Bloody hell. So glad you admit that. You admit that so freely and happily as well.
Not necessarily happy, it's just quite funny. I mean, I know I was a cow. I was really horrible. And I know I was. But like I say, we get on now. He's forgiven me. So
that's so good. You said that with such an evil tone in your voice. When you laughed and said, yeah, my brother, I can imagine it was a massive cuntish thing that you did to him a lot of the time.
It was just nice to really irritate him retaliate, and then him get in trouble for retaliating, but me not get in trouble for irritating him. So loved it.
That is going on through generations throughout the world as we speak. And it's something that never, ever gets tired or old, does it?
No, it's good fun. If I could get away with it now, I probably would.
That's an amazing feeling. Yeah, I love that feeling. I know where you're coming from.
I was younger than him, so I always got away with more.
So when they get to the party, there's obviously a lot of people there, a lot of people we don't know, but the characters we're introduced to, one of them's Joss, and the other one is Hayley. And apparently Hayley, and we spoke about this earlier, Kels, that she's trans, which is why this film was banned in several countries, because they obviously ignorantly refuse to watch a film with someone who's a transgender in it. And to be honest, when I watched this film, that I didn't know whether, kind of until she was named, that it was a female, to be honest. Did you guys?
Well, I wasn't sure what, until they gave her name, what she was supposed to be, but I have looked and she is non-binary.
Oh, okay.
Female and of like masculine appearance, so I think she is still technically a female, but she goes as non-binary.
All right. And is she, was that from IMDb? Has she been anything else, or was just that searching just through her personally?
That was just through her personally, to sort of find a bit about her backstory and what she sort of identifies as. I suppose I shouldn't be saying she, I should be they, because it's non-binary. But yeah, that's why, and like you say, that's why it was not shown in certain places.
Okay, for the sake of this podcast, I will be referring to Hayley as she, because in this film, she's identified as she by other people in the cast. So that's what I'm going to be doing. Otherwise, I will make regular mistakes. So they get the hand out, and there's all this nonsense about where it came from, and they talk about that later on in the film, that it was from a psychic who called the dead, and the hand was cut off and it was embalmed, or it's from a satanic person who spoke to the devil. And as usual, they want to call someone up, and this has been done in parties before. It's on YouTube, it's on Instagram and everything else, on TikTok. And surprise, surprise, it's Mia.
Look, does anyone else want to volunteer?
I'll do it.
You
want to
do it?
Mia's the first one called up who volunteers to do it. I don't know if she's volunteered, voluntold, peer pressure by the group, because she isn't very popular. And I think she does this purely in the hope but sad hope to gain some friends and popularity out of the group, isn't she?
Yeah, definitely. She's having a rough time. She's not the most popular of people, so she's going to do whatever she can to kind of boost her contact list, I imagine.
So there are certain rules about using the hand. You can only go under for 90 seconds and you have to light the candle. And light the candle is opening the door for the spirit who you're going to talk to. When you touch the hand, you say, talk to me, then let me in. And that's your connection to like the afterlife. And when Mia goes through, I have to say, I was really shocked because she sees this old bloke, and the makeup in this film throughout, from my point of view, is very, very effective, isn't it?
Yeah, I found it quite true to form in how a dead body would look.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I found her reaction very, very believable from seeing that old dead guy. It's like when you're under and you see someone who's wandering in like the spirit world looking for a way out, and the candle is the beacon, which is why they light the candle. And as soon as they say, let me in, that's it. They've kind of accepted to go into that afterlife. And she acts really well. From being kind of meek and mild, she just starts laughing, and her the fact, the effect of the pupils dilating and it just going like a manga character, ridiculously big, works so well, doesn't it?
Talk to me.
Hey, don't let go of me. Do not let go.
I can't look at it.
You don't have to look at it. You don't have to look at it. Just say it.
I can't.
Say it. I let you in. I let you in.
I let you in.
Yeah, I think the effects and everything and the makeup is all is good throughout. I think it is incredible. It's got great detail and gives you the desired effect.
And I also like the fact that everyone is there videoing it. There's fuck all responsibility that anyone gives a shit. It's more important to kind of video people doing it than actually give a shit. And everyone's enjoying it, apart from poor, freaky-looking Riley, who becomes fucking terrified because Mia looks terrified, stops laughing, looks at him, and says he's behind you. And it's like she's... the spirit who's possessed her is targeting Riley of being so weak, and especially what she says about being that he'll split you.
They like you. He's behind you now. He'll split you, pretty boy. He'll split you!
83 seconds, Joss, get it off her!
I'll split ya!
All right, you're
enough. I'll split ya!
It's very evident early on that the spirits have got a keen eye for Riley. Like, I think one of the first comments Mia says when she's possessed is, she's like, oh, they like you. And
yeah,
the eye contact and everything. When this is happening, if you were sat in where Riley was sat, understandably, you would be, you know, you'd be cacking yourself a little bit. It's because shit like that would fuck me up. I mean, this film fucks me up, so I would be suitably fucked up.
Yeah, I think the acting, the way it's portrayed, that the reaction from everyone there watching, it suddenly goes from video and it having a really good laugh to everyone in the room is just panicking. And then Joss, who's like a big guy, looks like a big Maori kind of guy, doesn't he? He tries to get the hand out of Mia's hand, and Hayley does as well, and they can't. And you learn that the trouble is that she's gone under, Kells, longer than the 90 seconds, which they don't really know what effect that will have, do they?
No, they know that the 90 seconds and they can shut the door and close it off. So I guess the longer they're under, the stronger the spirits get, which is why it becomes virtually impossible to take the hand away.
Yeah, and it's almost as if what happened to Mia hadn't happened to anyone else, because when you see the videos that they post on social media, they all seem quite easy going. We don't learn though of any other consequences, do we?
No, but you kind of know that when they stick to it properly, and I guess to the 90 seconds, that it's generally okay and kind of an enjoyable experience, because they go through a whole series of parties and times where they do it again and again and again, and everyone comes out of it fine and they're enjoying it and they keep going back to it. So if they can stick to the time for some reason, it is quite enjoyable. But it's when they go over, it becomes an issue.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I don't know whether I missed it, but you never learn kind of where they got the 90 seconds. It's got to be 90 seconds. It can't be any more. If it does, you're kind of, you've stepped into their realm too far, and they'll like take over your body and everything like that. It's kind of like urban myth. You don't really hear of any consequences or where they learn that from, do you?
No, I don't think anyone mentions it, to be honest, no.
But it's, they soon kind of have so much fun that they want to do it again, and you see them in go to speak to Haley and Josh, who's got the hands, and organise a party at Jade's house. And I do like the reaction from the mum, who's properly switched on. She knows something is going on.
Why is Daniel at the door?
Mum, can you let him in?
You better not be having a party, Jade. I swear to God.
It's two friends. Can you let him in?
What time's everyone getting here?
Getting here for what?
The party.
Is there a party tonight?
Don't bullshit me.
I'm sorry.
Have you got alcohol in your car?
Oh, no, I don't drink, so...
You're good.
And you don't quite learn as to why she's so protective, do you, over her daughter, Jade, and Riley as well.
Isn't that kind of just like a mum thing? Isn't that how they would be?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't got daughters, so I don't know how I'd be, but she's kind of like it to Riley when she's talking about the party. And when Daniel comes in, who they say he's Christian, he doesn't drink. And the first thing she says to him is like,
"You, my daughter's vagina, prohibited."
Oh my God, Mum, leave the room before I kill everyone.
The neighbours tell me everything.
She's very, very protective. There's no husband around, is there?
There's no dad. I don't think that's massively overprotective. I think that's just how a mum or a parent would be to a daughter of that age, where your boyfriend starts to come round and it's like open door rule, that kind of thing. And she's trying to be cool, I think, trying to sort of say she knows about the party, she knows about whatever. I think that's just how a parent would be.
Yeah. I mean, as I said, I got boys and I parent in a very different style, as you know. So I don't know how I'd be. But they get the handout, and it's Daniel, who's the boyfriend of Jade and once Mia, who he kind of wants to expel the myth that he's really boring and wants to give it a go. But what happens to him is just fucking brilliant. I can imagine it happening to you, Steve. I mean, what happens to him, you know what I mean?
I'm glad you volunteered me for the role of the fucking dog kisser.
Brilliant. It's so much fun, though, isn't it? You've got that, what is it, a bulldog?
Yeah.
From being boring. Someone possesses him who's like a fucking pervert nymphomaniac, and he falls on the floor off his chair and he starts open mouth kissing the dog. I mean, when he read the script for this, he must have thought, fucking hell, seriously. But they must have said to him, well, there's a really big kissing scene in this if you want to take the role, but we're not going to tell you it's with a bulldog. And it's awful, isn't it?
Well, I don't think it's... I mean, it's bad, but I still think the coldest part of that particular scene is when Daniel looks at his missus and the demon says, he doesn't like you. He doesn't like it when you touch him. You make him soft. I perceive that as she makes him flaccid.
Yes.
But that could also mean she makes him like a bit of a pansy. So, but yeah, I think that was cold. And then he falls on the floor after he started, because he starts wanking himself off, presumably, yeah, from what he's doing. Starts grinding on the floor and then, yeah, gets some action with the dog. I would have been like, right, I'll do this scene, but you were going to have to bump me up at least 50 grand for me to get off of a bulldog.
That's a low price.
On top of what I'm already getting paid.
Yeah,
that's still 50 grand for open mouth kissing a dog.
I think for some of the things you've done, Kels, yeah, let's hear a price.
I would not do that.
Really? It's 50 grand.
I don't care. No way. Am I kissing a dog in any way, let alone open mouth?
What about your own one?
No.
It wouldn't bother me if someone's giving me 50 grand cash on the table and they just said, in this film, you've got the dog, you've got a tongue of dog for 5 seconds. What? If someone would say, you did that to a dog, I'd be like, yeah, look at this 50K that I've got on me.
No. No, I can't.
I mean, obviously, this is on top of what I'm already getting paid. I don't want to do 50K for the whole movie.
Yeah.
So...
No.
So I'd expect like 100K in total to do this.
Oh no, God no, no! I'm sorry. I couldn't do it. It would make me vomit. I no.
Like Stu said, you've done a lot worse. So you know,
I haven't. I genuinely haven't. But I love the image you've created of me. It's endearing.
Well, that's not a problem. And again, the makeup is really good on Daniel. And it's interesting that through various possessions, which you see, I mean, there is a montage scene later on where they have the party that they're at, that various people get possessed. And it's kind of more fun. But they all seem to target Riley in some way. And as you said earlier, Steve, Daniel turns around. He looks so evil. The makeup is brilliant.
He hates it when you touch him. You make him soft.
You're the spirit's a cunt.
I took it as a sexual thing that they were saying, yes, it makes him go flaccid and soft in that way, not emotionally.
I honestly didn't know, because I suppose Riley's meant to be, what, 14? Is he 15, do you think, at the most? I didn't know how to take that comment from whatever spirit, what they were saying.
I mean, I kind of just got that it was a weird, perverted spirit that just being grim.
It was, as you say, from what Daniel, being very, very vanilla, was started kind of masturbating and playing with himself in front of everyone, something that clearly he wouldn't do. And when he did come out the spell, that he was distraught, begging everyone to delete the footage, which you just wouldn't, to be fair, would you? It's from a gang of friends, this is just fucking gold dust, isn't it?
Yeah.
Remind me never to get drunk in your company.
Honestly, you haven't got to worry. I rarely go out anyway, so this is it. Plus, I'm too tight to buy drinks, so you'll be fine.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
But yeah, it is really, really weird. And it's all good fun until Riley, obviously, at the end of the party, wants to do the hand. And you knew what was going to happen, because it's been done in so many films before. You know it's going to go tits up for Riley. Mia was really apologetic about her actions, because she was the one who said, go on, you can have 50 seconds, and then it upped it to 60, and we'll explain in a second why. And she's 100% responsible, but I don't think she owns it enough. And I understand why. I mean, Riley goes under, and the spirit, or the alleged spirit, of the mum takes over and starts talking to Mia.
I'd never want to hurt you. So much, me.
Hey, that's 50 seconds.
No, please don't close it off. Leah. Just say it's my mum, please.
I love you both, baby.
I love you too, Mum.
I'm so proud of you.
And I've seen enough films to know that this isn't the spirit of Mia's mum. You know it. There's a catch, don't you?
Yeah, I was sceptical, because they'd made reference that the demons can take on other people and pretend they're someone else. And she has started like having hallucinations by this point and seeing things. So she's not having a great time. So you know there's something more sinister at work. So yeah, I didn't believe it to be truly her mum. But then there's something later on in the film that makes me think it is her mum, and it's all very confusing.
I took it that it wasn't ever Mia's mum, and it was always an angle for the spirits to get who they wanted most of all, more than anyone, whether it's because of his age, his innocence, or whether it's because he's a virgin or anything like that, but that they all wanted Riley. That's why I never thought it was Mia's mum. What did you think, Hel?
I didn't think it was Mia's mum because they made the reference saying that the spirits like him when she went under before. So I figured it was just a way, because you knew as soon as Mia thought it was her mum, she would say, oh no, hold it longer. You could kind of see that coming. It was expected.
I'll ask you both this question, because this is where I get confused, and we'll jump quite a lot into the film. There is a scene later on where Mia's talking to mum again, saying, that's not your dad.
Yeah.
And then a demon seeming to be dad comes in and starts attacking her. So it's almost like, has she helped her? This is where I started to get confused, whether it wasn't kind of thing.
No, it was always, I mean, as you say, we'll talk about that in more detail. I think this was all a plot to affect the vulnerabilities of Mia, which you see at the start, where you've got the funeral, or kind of the anniversary of the funeral of Rhea, who's Mia's mum's death. So they kind of sow that seed that she is alone, and it's unknown, isn't it, Kells? The death. There's two different versions. There's the version of like the dad could have done more, and there's an element of blame to the dad, whereas the mum took an overdose in the bath and she killed herself and left a note, didn't she?
Yeah, and I guess it depends whether you believe that the spirit is her mum or is some demon as to what version of that you believe. But I think the bit where Mia's talking to her mum and she goes, "That's not your dad," I think that's the evil spirit giving Mia ammo to do what she does. They basically want that horrendous outcome, so they are feeding you information to make you do that. So I never thought that it was a nice spirit.
No, I completely agree. And for me personally, I mean, the knife in the eye at the start of the film from Duckett was just fantastic. But Riley takes the biscuit with regards to shock factor when he's possessed and he starts headbutting. He leans back, then just launches himself forward, kind of without stopping, and headbutts the table. And it's so graphic. And it goes on where he's thrown across the room and he headbutts this cabinet. And it's just really, really graphic, isn't it?
It is. And I really enjoyed it.
So did I. I was really having fun. What about you, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a while ago now we've done Final Destination, but this scene alone beats everything because there's no cut. There's no dodgy angles. It's like you can see the whole thing and it's full force smacking his head off a table and the blood instantly, and you can see the damage it's doing and everyone panicking. The acting at this point is fucking incredible, I think. For such a bunch of like almost unknowns, the way they portray each character in this scene is so good, because Mia's froze because she's so still caught up about, "Oh, did I just speak to my mum?" that she can't do anything.
Yeah, yeah. As you say, it's flawless acting and it's really, really surprising. You expect something to happen, but it just kind of takes it from 3 to 10 straight away with regards to the violence. And there's nothing anyone can do. The expression on Jade's face when she walks in and sees her little brother's face just split open and he can't stop himself. And when you see him in hospital, the makeup is brilliant. It's so, so good. Better than a lot of things we've seen with a much bigger budget. It's just really effective. And we learned that through all of the chaos that's happened, that Mia has in fact taken the hand home. And I think you could say she did that to hide it from the police who do turn up. But I think it's more out of an obsession and curiosity to speak to her mum. That's what I took. I don't know what you guys took from that.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on that.
Yeah, and again, when Mia goes to the hospital, I don't think that's out of caring. I think that's purely out of guilt. And I thought she had some fucking front to go to the hospital to see if she's responsible, to see if he's okay. And I know that the mum, that Sue, does let rip in the way she does, but I think she got off lightly. I mean, this is all fucking her fault, and it's purely for selfish reasons, isn't it?
And I don't think she goes there out of guilt either. I think she's going there, again, curiosity. She still wants to speak to her mum. She still wants to know more. And Riley seems to now be a gateway between her and who she believes to be her mum. So a little bit of guilt, but more curiosity.
What did you think of it's kind of tropey, and it's been done in fuck loads of films. And I kind of rolled my eye a bit of when they're in the hospital and Mia does see her mum in the reflection. And it was done in the film Countdown, where they see like death, and they go and follow death into the toilet, and it's quite a freaky, bizarre scene. And exactly the same thing happens in this. And it always appears to be a toilet that some demon walks in. I don't know whether that's like a fucking fetish they've got. But why on earth? And you know your mum's dead. And this was what kind of annoys me in all these films. They know the person's dead. And I've been through grief. And if I did see my dad, God rest his soul, I certainly know that regretfully he has passed away, and I would not go anywhere to try and chase him, to talk to him, And this really annoyed me, this scene. I found it very fucking tropey that's been done so many times, that the mum's in the toilet and she's pushing on the toilet door. There's nothing there. Of course there's nothing there. This was just took me out of the film for a bit. I don't know what you guys thought.
This is when she's in the toilet, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, and you can hear, obviously, the noise of the scratching, which is, you know, she's made reference to that earlier on, saying her mum was found with wood under her nails and she'd been scratching at the door. So you can hear that noise. I think she's so caught up in the moment that she's there's no rational thinking. So she can be blamed for it. Yeah, I still liked it. It didn't throw me off or anything.
Going through grief, it is a common thing where you think you see that person. And it isn't uncommon for people to, even though, like you say, Stu, that you know that that person has passed away, it's a common thing for people to see them and try and chase them and follow them, but they're not actually there. And that does happen in grief. Not to everybody, but it is something that can happen. And I think that's what this is playing on, because she obviously is still grieving massively. And she also thinks that the person she was talking to through Riley was her mum. So she does potentially think that her mum is actually there, maybe in spirit form, but she thinks she's there. So yeah, I quite liked it.
No, it's cool. I love everyone's opinion. And when she leaves the toilet and she goes down into the stairwell, I kind of was overthinking this, but when Daniel chases her and he's above her looking down on her, and she's kind of just obviously panicking because she doesn't know what's going on. The way it was shot with Daniel standing up on the stairs, I just so expected some maggot-filled kind of person to be standing behind him that he can't see that she can, which will freak her out more. And I think I had more anxiety because I was waiting for that to happen.
Well, they clearly missed a trick with that one, didn't they? Because that didn't happen.
No. And I think you could give kudos to this, that it kind of puts you in that position where it fucks your mind. I think it shocks me in so many different ways, coming off the back of Riley, that I was kind of waiting for this to happen. And when Daniel does take Mia back home, I honestly thought, and it does go in a different direction, that they were going to get it on, because they do start to reminisce about their relationship, even though we've learned that it's more of a friendship that kind of went into a relationship and they broke up. And when they're in bed, they're going top to tail and she looks in the corner of the room. And this always freaks me out. This is just a thing that I hate, because when you're in our room, if my wife hangs up a dress on like the cupboard and I wake up in the middle of the night, and I did it the other night, I saw this dress and I thought it was a figure standing over the bed. It just freaks me out. And when they showed something in the corner of the room and you're just waiting and you've got this old lady like the one from The Shining in a nightie rotting away and she crawls across the floor, it's quite a disturbing figure, isn't it?
This is one of those things where in the fucking cinema I did it, you know, it pans across the room and you just see see something in the corner like you do in real life.
Yeah.
And I was like, did you just see that, is that a pile of clothes? And lo and behold, it starts moving. I was like, no, see you later. Fucking hands were over the face, I couldn't watch, fuck that shit. And that's what fucked me up. It's so true to form, isn't it? Growing up, you see something in the corner and you strain your eyes going, is there someone in the corner? And
I know.
Yeah. Fuck that shit. I don't like this movie. It scares me. I've said it.
This film
scares me. Oh, fuck off, you fucking cum bubble.
Bubble? I'm a bubble now. That's a new one. Okay.
But it does it. It really plays on like your everyday fears, even as an adult, a kind of weird discovery that just these little things, the paranoias, that it just picks away like a thread. And they're in bed and she starts having visions and dreams of her mum dying. And we learn later on in the film, but at the moment, this is sowing seeds in the viewer's mind, done it really well, that they show Max, who's her dad, giving CPR to the mum, dragging her out of the bathroom. And like her nails are broken. So it still gives the impression that she's trying to escape from the bathroom, and it's putting like proportion of the blame onto Mia's dad still, isn't it? From the viewer's point of view and for Mia.
Well, I think this is where you really start to get torn with who is to blame, because as a viewer, you're so heavily on Mia's story that you feel almost like you have to blame her dad because you don't know much about him. So, but then you see dad is trying his hardest and dad is still trying to engage with Mia the whole time throughout the movie and she's just batting him off. So at this point, you're kind of getting a bit like Mia's a bit of a, you know, she's grieving and she's not taking it well, but she's shutting everyone out. So, you know, maybe she needs to be, she's really getting thrown about by these demons. It is, it's becoming a bit of a shit show emotionally. And this is where the psychological aspect really comes into it because I didn't know who to support, whose side to be on. I was torn.
No. And it is really mixed messages. I couldn't understand the relevance of the female who's crawling across the floor, like the ghost or the spirit that is sucking Daniel's toes and feet quite aggressively in bed. And it looks absolutely disgusting. And when he wakes up, it's Mia doing it. And Daniel freaks the fuck out as if, like, what are you doing? Understandably, he storms out the house. Why was the ghost sucking the toes? Why was this kind of sexual? Was this to try and put a divide between Jade and Mia because Daniel has dated both of them? Was that the point, or was it just something visually disturbing for, like, for us, the viewer?
I think it's more to isolate Mia more and more from the team, so she's more vulnerable to what her mum is saying, because she's going to look for any sort of support. If she's got no friends or support around her, and the only person supporting her is this demon, she's going to be more easily influenced. But the question is, Kel, how much would you have to be paid to film that scene?
What, sucking feet? Or having that thing suck my feet?
You sucking feet.
I mean, it would depend on the feet I'm sucking. It's very, very dependent. If they are not clean, like free of manky dead skin or long toenails, or I don't know, they've got to be perfect feet for me to even consider it.
Okay, they are perfect feet then in your eyes. How much is the studio going to have to pay you?
At least $50,000, at least, now, if not more.
We'll get a different actress. You're not worth it. We'll get some.
That is perfectly fine by me. I'll happily decline.
I mean, I was thinking maybe like £20, but you got to fucking slow down.
I have higher standards than you. Not so easily pleased.
So it's not long until Mia gets the hand out, as you said, Steve, that she's been kind of socially isolated anyway, and that she summons her mum. And I don't know what it is. Like, I think of the makeup on loads of different films, when you get these ghosts and when they put those white contacts in, so it blacks, like, blocks out the pupils, it's always really fucking scary because you make contact with person's eyes. And when they don't have any pupils to do that, it just freaks me out. It really is so effective, isn't it?
I mean, it doesn't even, they just look like, I don't know, they look like dead fish eyes. Yeah, it's very effective and it's quite gross. You just don't really know where to look. But that's also to do with the rest of the makeup, because it is really good. The whole thing just looks gruesome.
And it's great because it's not over the top, is it? They don't think, right, we're going to show a dead person or a zombie. Let's just coat that person with makeup. It does seem really subtle and it's great. And the mum gives the message that it's a lie and that she didn't want to leave Mia.
Did you kill yourself? No. Not on purpose, me. Is that the truth? I'd never want to leave you. Ever. I'm here. Always.
And if you're kind of really watching this, and especially on a rewatch, you learn that this isn't Rhea, the mum, that this is an evil spirit, and they're rightly so, as you said, it breaks my heart to say, Kels, you're right, that they're picking on a vulnerability, her grieving, because this is where they really concentrate on putting blame for her on her dad, Max, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, and they're trying to turn her against everyone that's actually there looking out for her. They're doing everything they can to get her to turn on them.
Yeah, and it's a very slow seed that they sow, which is great because they give you that message. And it's done really well because as an audience, you think, fuck, like, is, like, there's something wrong with the dad? Is there something that she doesn't know? And they, I don't know if it's done on purpose, but they kind of take you away from that. When you get to the shower scene with Riley, again, the makeup is absolutely flawless. In the shower with his mum, Sue, and Riley, he just goes fucking schizo, doesn't he?
Yeah, another harrowing scene with how much force goes into these things. It's fucking, yeah, it's disgusting.
Would you say, again, that he's a good actor, or that the makeup is so visually good, the way he responds to go and bite himself and the smile on his face when he's laying on the floor, headbutting the wall, breaking the wall with his head, breaking those tiles, and the way he licks the blood off. Would you, kind of visually for me, it works because the makeup is just so effective.
Yeah, I think that it heavily relies on the makeup, because if it wasn't for how disfigured he is by this point, probably wouldn't have the same effect, because you wouldn't see quite how much distress and pain he's causing himself. But there is an element of, fuck me, it's like a, I mean, when I was 14, 15, yeah, I was doing weird shit, but this kid is acting to such a level where he is crawling along the floor, licking up blood, smiling whilst he's cracking his skull off the bathroom tiles. He's doing a good job. I've got to give it to him.
Yeah, it's really, really fucked up, isn't it? And you get the messages, well, Mia gets the messages, which kind of sums it up, really. You know where the film's going to go for the last kind of 20 minutes or so, that they tell Mia that she needs to kill Riley to put him out of his misery. All the evil spirits are really saying that, because they want him sacrificed just so that they can basically have him for himself. And that's when she takes the hand again to the hospital. And it's a disturbing scene where she actually sees where Riley is kind of sat in like the halfway, where all of these like ghouls and demons, they're all naked. Riley's naked. And it's like they're kind of like feasting on his body, on his soul, isn't it? Visually, it's really disturbing.
It is, but I think it's got to be for the reaction that he has every time something happens and how like fucked up he makes himself. It has to be something like that to justify it. It has to be something really horrific to sort of get the point across and to sort of show they are still strong, they are still there, they are still sort of, they do mean business, and you've got to do something serious to prevent this from going any further.
Well, you've got Daniel and you've got Jade, who their sole mission, their motivations are to get Riley back out of whatever's happened to him, the coma he's in. And Mia's motivations, interestingly enough, are purely self-preservation, to connect with the mum. And it's interesting that they're doing the same thing but with different dynamics, and it plays really well though, doesn't it?
I find it actually a little bit annoying, because she is being so selfish, because Mia's being, she's just not using logic or being fair to the situation. Like, she does it the first time, it doesn't work, and they say no, don't do it again, don't do it again. Every time they say don't do it and she goes against it, something bad happens. So she's clearly got problems. So that, I found that quite annoying, but yeah, it gives it a good like dynamic where they're trying to get a different response or reaction from doing the same thing, so someone is always going to lose.
Yeah, and I think it has to work like that for the way the film actually ends. I really wasn't prepared for what happens to Max, because he's just been mentioned, he's been a bit part in this, and that's it. But the spirits, again, they're not just talking to Mia when she's under the spell of the hand using it. They seem to be around all the time, and that they tell her, because he reads out a note, and this kind of had me going on the first viewing, that it's from the mum, basically admitting and apologising for taking her own life, that things are really difficult, and that it isn't Mia's fault, and the dad's been kind of carrying this weight around all his life, hasn't he? So there's no guilt felt by Mia. And then a spirit comes up and says it's all a lie and that he's trying to get you. And it was done so well on first viewing, I kind of flipped and thought, yeah, maybe the dad is in on it before he gets killed and before it is kind of an apparition of a ghost and it's not the actual dad. It did have me convinced. I don't know what you guys thought on your first viewing.
This is where I got confused, because I didn't know if they were trying to help Mia or not, so Yeah, by this point, I was scrambled. I had no idea.
Is that because you were scared?
I was still a little bit scared, yeah, because by this point, you know, Mum's quite a key feature in Mia's life, and she's looking all kind of grim and dirty, so I'm a bit distracted by that. And yeah, it's now by this point, are they setting Mia up? Are they trying to help Mia? Do they really need to help Riley? Are they setting Riley up? And I suppose you could just, it's down to the viewer as how you perceive this, because I don't know if there's a set in stone explanation. So I was a bit, I was torn at this point. I was scrambled. I was confused. I was scared. A little bit of wee, a little bit of poo. I had it all going on.
But did you think, Kels, when he was reading that note out, and we've only got Max's word that it's from, like, the mum, did you think that was, like, legitimate, or did you think he was just making that up to kind of put her at peace because he knows that she's grieving?
No, I thought it was legitimate, because I don't see how, if you've got a note like that and you've not said anything about it to start with, revealing it, even if someone's still grieving, is only going to make the situation, at least initially, worse. It's not going to make it better. So if she's in this situation where she's clearly really struggling with everything and everything around her is falling apart, it's not really the right time to say, oh yeah, by the way, I've got a note from your mum. So I think he was trying to do the right thing, but failed.
But when they're cuddling, when he's kind of trying to comfort her and she looks in the mirror and sees in a reflection the mum to say, like, don't trust him, like, he's lying. Did you think that he was lying? When she goes, that's not your dad. Bearing in mind, we've had visions before.
Sweetheart, that's not your dad. That's not Max.
Mia.
They're imitating him. He's going to hurt you.
Mia, open the door!
No, because I figured that the thing that's supposed to be her mum that she sees in the mirror, that is the spirit. So to me, that's the evil bit.
Right.
So I figured his dad, her dad, the constant, like, good thing in her life, so that's why they were trying to fuck that relationship over, because he is there for her. He won't leave her. And they want to destroy that, so she becomes more susceptible to them. So
it's really convincing, though, isn't it? Because when you see the vision of Mum, the door is kind of banging, and Mum saying he needs to die, and you kind of think, is that the dad on the outside trying to get into the bedroom to get her? And she's being coerced by the mum, who's obviously an evil spirit. And then we find out that the spirits are doing all of this and manipulating themselves. And that it's a classic case of what happened in Slender Man when she's strangling herself. And then when Max does come in to try and help her, legitimately, that she stabs him in the throat with a pair of scissors. I was shocked. I honestly was shocked. The first viewing, this got me, I have to say.
Oh, I can't say I was shocked, because you knew, well, I figured with him attacking her, you knew that's not her dad. Her dad's not going to turn around and start strangling her.
But the dad's possessed. He's got this, again, hazy eyes. His skin's bad. I thought, because they showed him with the hand in the lounge, that suddenly he was possessed by that hand.
Oh,
and that's him running in. And that's why I thought, fuck, dad's actually been possessed by the hand. And he is. And that's why it kind of twisted that. I thought, fuck, maybe the mum is good. But they soon kind of course correct, don't they, when their actual dad comes in, who you said just has their best interests, but sadly gets a pair of scissors in the front, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's unfortunate, isn't it, that that's where she stabs him. But yeah, I think they do. The story is then quite straight from then onwards, really. You know, everything that is there is possessing good things to her, so that it's trying to twist her mind, and it works to a degree.
Yeah, there's pretty much a countdown that happens now, that she does ring up the hospital, does speak to Jade and say, come over to my house, in a way to get Jade out of the hospital, so she can go over there and kill Riley herself. And it's interesting, because she does go over to the hospital, and she manages to get Riley's mum away. And she's got, like, the pair of scissors. And you see the demons in the bed. Riley is kind of possessed. And he becomes another, like, zombie figure. Were they kind of changing Riley into a monster so she'd be scared and kill Riley so they'd win? Or was that another form of Riley? I was a bit lost, I've got to say.
I forget that they were trying to trick her in the issue was to stab the evil possessed old man looking thing in the wheelchair. That she would think she's doing the right thing because she's killing the demon when in actual fact she's killing Riley. So I figured that was them again trying to play a trick on her to get what they want so that he's been sacrificed.
But she's shouting out, where is he? And you can't take him. So it kind of gives you that impression that, well, she's doing this to save Riley. But a minute ago, her motivations were fucking kill Riley and I want to save my mum. Suddenly, they've changed. Or have they not changed? I was a bit confused at this point of what they were trying to give me.
I am ending this.
You can't take him. He's ours.
I took it that once she killed her dad, the realisation in her face when she's turned around and she stabbed him and she's realised, oh, fuck, I got that wrong. I think at that point she's realised that the spirit is not her mum. So what she's telling her isn't the best thing. And I think she now has then a continual battle between, I want to see my mum, but it's not my mum, so I can't do that. It's not really Riley. And it's a battle. That's why she goes to kill him, but then she doesn't. That's like internal struggles where she's grieving, but she's trying to do the right thing, but she's grieving.
Okay, then, looking at that from that point of view then, Steve, if that is the case, do you think it's a good thing that it's open to a degree to interpretation as to what you think her motivations are? I'm still thinking at this point that, rightly or wrongly, that she's trying to get the mum and she's trying to kill Riley. But then what she's saying is different. It's open to interpretation. Is that good or bad, or is that bad story writing?
No, I think that's good, because there are so many ways you can look at this. Because obviously, yeah, she just killed her dad and there is like a element of realisation, but she's still so overcome with guilt and happiness of seeing her mum that she still wants to kind of save Riley and do what her mum's telling her. So she's kind of like, yeah, I've just fucked up with my dad, but I've still got some. There's something I need to do. And so she kind of leaves that all behind. And so I don't think it's bad story writing at all. I think if anything, it's clever because it can be perceived in so many different ways and not be wrong, because it is just your perception.
And I think that is echoed again where, when she's like leaning over Riley with the pair of scissors and she's crying, she doesn't know what to do. And she turns around and sees that kangaroo who, like the ghost of the kangaroo in the road, where she should have put him out his misery and killed it. And it's again in the corridor of the hospital, bleeding, kind of hopping along, and like a representation of, this is your chance to put someone out its misery and kill Riley. Where, to a certain degree, Riley is in misery, but he can or can't be saved. It's a real dilemma, isn't it? Because is she doing the right thing by killing him or the wrong thing? And it is very, very clever, isn't it? From one point of view, you could say, well, you need to save him or you need to kill him. What do you do? How do you do it? It's very, very clever, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's the whole... It's been foreshadowed in the film, hasn't it, with the kangaroo earlier on. You know, the kangaroo... We should have done it. Now I've got a chance to do it. So yeah, it's a good move for the film.
Yeah, and I think the ending's really clever as well, that she doesn't stab Riley with a pair of scissors, that she takes him in a wheelchair and goes down to the motorway, and she's standing there, and in the motorway, Riley is, again, that figure of the old woman who's looking up as if to say, put me out my misery. And then you've got the mum behind her with her hands on poor old Mia's shoulders, encouraging her to do the right thing. And she's in a fucking no-win situation. And she takes her own life in the end. But it's done very well, because on first viewing, you don't know whether the accident, when you see someone hit the windscreen, is Riley or whether it's Mia. It really leaves you guessing, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think first viewing, up until the end, you're guessing. But the second viewing, I noticed that when Mia gets up, she's in the middle of the road. So you're like, oh, Riley's at the side of the road. Mia's in the middle. And as Mia gets up and people are running over, they run. It's literally just off camera, but the woman runs almost past Mia. So something is still on the floor.
Yeah.
And it's a blink, you'll miss it. So second time watching it, you're going, yep, Mia's dead.
Yeah, and there are little kind of subtleties that give you that. Like when she walks back to the hospital with all her injuries, no one can see her. And she doesn't cast a reflection on any of the windows that she walks past and the glass partitions that she's there. And she sees that like, the ghost of her dad. So it gives you that point away. But you do see that Riley, all of a sudden, despite the marks on his face, that him being completely fucked up, is perfectly well and walking out of the hospital. But do you see a time lapse between this? Or is it straight away?
No, it's almost like a time lapse. But this another thing is Mia's dad actually dead, because she's seen Riley walk out of the hospital and she's seen her dad getting a lift. So
that's a really good point. Because Jade called an ambulance, didn't she?
Yeah, he was breathing conscious when she got there. So we don't really know the outcome. So again, it's another, how do you perceive this? What do you perceive this whole scene to be? Is this reality? Is this some sort of limbo place? It leaves you with questions. And I suppose the questions can be answered in the next movie. But again, I don't think there's a wrong or right answer.
No, and the ending, Kells, I thought was very clever. And I knew what was going to happen the way it was going. That you see a guy sitting at the table and everything's dark and the candle's burning. And she reaches out and holds the hand of this person. And I think she's speaking to people in Greece, is that right?
Yeah.
Who are doing a similar thing to what they all did at the start of the film, and it's gone full circle. I thought that was a very, very smart way to end this film. Did you?
Well, yeah, and it leaves it, because she is almost as shocked on that side of it as she was on the other side. So it shows that she clearly wasn't expecting to end up in that position, but it also leaves it open for the next one.
Did you have sympathy for her, though, Kels, that she was in that position or not really?
Not really, because if she'd have listened in the first place, it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, completely. So I was of that. I thought, fuck it. What about you, Steve?
I thought it was such a good way to finish the film. It's gone full circle, really, hasn't it? When it finishes on the Greek bloke saying, talk to me, I thought it was awesome.
So from this, what do you kind of hope not to see in the second one? I know that there's been nothing released, only the fact that they're doing the second one. But if you turned up, we all went to the cinema together, and what would make you really roll your eyes?
For me, from watching, I recently watched the Pope's Exorcist.
Right.
And I really enjoyed it, but the end was tropey. The end is they saved the day and everyone's fine. In the original Talk to Me, this film, the main kind of protagonist dies. There's no hope. She dies. They don't all go home to happy families. I don't want them to start being able to expel demons and exorcisms. I think I want more of it is impossible. Once you're drawn in, you're drawn in. So if they start finding special ways to, you know, reverse the effects, I think that'll ruin it for me.
What about you, Kel?
That would destroy it, because it would take away everything from the first film, because if they can reverse it, why didn't that happen initially? But I also think if they played a lot on her story and kept that going through it, that would irritate me as well, because they've done her story. They need to move on and do something. I know it'll be the same film, but they need to do something different to keep the like dramatic scenes and everything dramatic. Otherwise it's kind of just expected and there's nothing new. You're not going to be shocked.
Yeah, it's a huge risk, isn't it? I think doing a second one, because I wouldn't want to go and see another film about them trying to rescue Mia and bring her back to life. I think that would be terrible. And then again, as you've just said, Cal, do you want another film where you get a whole group of people who do exactly the same thing? Where do you go? How do you make it original? It's a massive gamble off the back of a film that made 91 million, especially if they double, triple the budget for this. You could just ruin it, couldn't you? I would be quite happy. I was happy when Steve said they're doing a second one. My first kind of reaction was I'm really excited, but I do, especially with them kind of regurgitating loads of different things, like the latest Ghostbusters. The last Ghostbusters was just about bearable, only because they brought back the stars at the end, which kind of saved it. But I don't want another one, and I don't know if I want another Talk to Me too. I don't know what they can do, and it does worry me. But I mean, off the back of that, I mean, Steve, how would you score this? How would you rate this film? You certainly, I know you'd recommend it.
Yeah, so I will put this as a 4.5 out of 5. I think it's great. I think there's going to be little bits where they maybe could have cleared up some of the plot so we didn't have to wonder. But other than that, I think it's original, it's fresh, it's damaging, definitely to me. So yeah, it scores high.
Well, that's interesting. And what about yourself, Carl?
I would give it a good 3.5 out of 5. I would recommend it. I think the beginning of it pulls you in straight away and sets you up for a lot of gore and graphic detail, which I enjoy. And I think it's the first film that I've seen that sort of starts like that. And apart from sort of 10, 15 minutes of it, carries on like that. I think it's good. So yeah, 3.5 for me.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I really enjoyed it. I was really surprised when I went to see it in the cinema. It blew me away. I was really engaged with the whole thing. And it was a really original idea. I'd give it probably a 4. I recommend it 100%. Especially if you go into it spoiler-free, you'd enjoy it even more. For a low budget, not knowing anyone in it, I just thought it was great. I just hope they give the second one the respect that it deserves, and it's done by the same brothers who did this one, because it's absolutely superb. But yeah, so that is our review of Talk To Me. And just before I say goodbye, I can tell you, in fact, what we're doing next week. Myself and Kelly will be back to talk about 1988 Cheese Fest, which is Cocktail, starring Tom Cruise as Brian Flanagan, and Doug Coughlin, played by Brian Brown. We'll be quoting Coughlin's Law. We'll be talking about cocktails. We'll be talking about why it takes so long to be served by these two in a bar, because they're just showing off. It's going to be a really good, fun film. It's going to be the 80s. I should imagine it's a film made probably before Kelly was actually born. So it's going to be really interesting. Thanks again, everyone, for your support. Please go to iTunes, go to Spotify, leave us 5 stars, leave us a comment. A positive one will be nice. And we'll be back next week. You take care. Thanks very much.